That's what I forgot.
With old things, easy to erase.
Oh,
but what we wanted to say was that many of your friends and a lot of your relatives wanted to get some of your smart remarks. But the hardest thing is to catch them at the right time.
And I don't know they're smart when I'm saying them. And so, and they may not sound smart to the other people, too.
Well, to say, what did your mother say about you way back then?
I can't remember which
that you mean. You make smart remarks and then try to
think
rivet it.
And
then
I make it worse than it was to start with. Yeah, you know, when I try to fix it, she'll say, Lucille, let it go. Don't try to fix it. Because it gets worse every time you try to fix it. So.
Well, now, we'll see what we got here. Ooh, take pause off.
Uh-huh. Now it's on.
It's on again now.
Uh-huh.
And we've got no smart remark to make.
I can't think of one. I wish I could think of something smart to say.
They don't. Now they stand there.
It comes up, it comes
up,
comes
right.
Absolutely. And I think, is it
going to
be on now? Oh, Lord, y'all say something.
Tell that story you told us a while ago about somebody getting frozen onto a wagon wheel. What was that?
Well,
that was funny.
Well, it was my nephew, my first husband's nephew. Is that thing home?
What does it matter? Go ahead.
Anyway, his brother, they were hitching up two mules to a wagon, and the wagon had been out in the cold, and they said, you know, if you stick your tongue to the wagon tongue, then it'll stick to it. And of course, Buford didn't believe it, so Hooper said, stick it down there and see. He said, it will, too. So he said he just put his tongue down there, and he kind of pulled, so he pulled back. And so he thought, well, I'm going to see. So he said he put about a foot of his tongue down on that wagon tongue. And it stuck, and he couldn't get it out. And so he said he pulled and pulled and said he couldn't get it. And I was like, spin on it, you would do that. I can't get it.
Now you tell your tale about this.
About Dan.
Dan stuck on.
Oh, that was.
You don't have to get me. You don't have to get me, brother. It picked up.
Oh, well, that was when Daniel came up to Akron, Ohio for our wedding. He came on Monday, and our wedding was on Friday. And I met him at the station, and it was a snowstorm, and it was cold. And I had to lock my car, because that's a rule. That's a law in Ohio. You have to lock your car if you leave it parked. So I locked it. And I had to wait a long while before that train came in, because it was delayed because of the snowstorm. So when it finally got there, and we got up to the street, we couldn't get the key in the lock because it was frozen. So Daniel said, well, I'll just blow it in the lock, and it will melt the ice. So he put his mouth up to the lock and blew on it. And then when he wanted to move away, he couldn't. His lips were stuck to the lock. And I said, well, Daniel, spit on it. Spit is warm, and maybe it'll melt. So he did, and it worked. And so he got loose. But his lips didn't look funny. They had a red spot on the bottom and on the top.
Is it on now?
Yeah. Is it on?
Leave that, all that mess on there, because we might not get anything
that sounds in the belly. This thing's on now. Now tell about your birth.
Well, you know, everybody has a birth, but I had mine a little bit too early. My mother and dad and two older sisters were going to spend Christmas with Grandma. And, of course, that was before we had cars, and it was cold and freezing. It's Christmas. They were going up to Grandma's, about 10 miles, to spend the Christmas. And I decided to be born. I guess I decided, nobody else did. But then, oh, I forgot that's going on.
Go ahead.
But anyway, while we were there, Christmas day, my mother got sick, and I started, and so I was born. Well, we didn't have any clothes for me, so I was bobbed almost like Jesus, you know, wrapped in swaddling clothes, because I didn't have any clothes. But my grandma got up enough to wrap me up in, and my dad had to go back the next day in the horse and buggy to get my clothes. And that was before we built the big house on the farm. And this little house we lived in didn't have any closets. It didn't have any closets in it. Mama had fixed my clothes in a market basket and put a paper over it and put it under the bed. Of course, children didn't have clothes like they have now. You could very well put all mine in a market basket. But anyway, when he took him all day to go and come with the clothes, and Grandma was so glad to see him come in with the market basket, and she took it and went in the bedroom and took the top off, and it was quilt scraps.
Quilt scraps?
Yeah, quilt scraps. So that, and I was called quilt scraps for ages after that. But anyway, he had to go back the next day, and she told him there was another market basket under there. It happened to be two, but he didn't know that, so he got quilt scraps. But he said the next day that he looked before he left there with that next market basket, because he didn't want to come home with something else. So they said the reason he did that was because he was having a Christmas party, and he didn't pay attention to what he was doing, but he didn't know to look in it. But that was my tale.
Well, tell the rest of it 40 years later, when you wanted to get a passport and went to see an aunt.
Oh, yeah. Well, I didn't have any way of proving how old I was and when my birthday was. So I just decided I wasn't going to be able to get my passport. And
where were you going?
Was going to Europe and to the Holy Land and all. I don't know, several countries. I've forgotten how many. But anyway, the preacher, Claude Fulton, said to me, he said, Lucille, don't you have somebody that can sign to you? I said, well, I don't know of anybody, except I said, I have an aunt living here in Cordell that a few years older than I, but I said, he said, he asked me who it was, and of course, he knew her. I didn't know he knew her, but he knew her, and her son-in-law was, he said, one of his best stewards. And, it was Woodrow Gay, the postmaster there, had married my niece, and my aunt's daughter. Anyway, so we went by to see her, and I said, ain't no, I'm trying to get my passport. I said, do you remember when I was born? She said, I guess I do. You spoiled our Christmas. She's only 8 years older than I am, but he said she could sign for me if she was 8 years older. So,
so you got by.
Yeah, I got my passport.
Another funny tale you tell is something about Hetcher Coffee.
Oh, that was Miss Lucy George, son of George's wife. And you'd have to know Miss Lucy to really appreciate it, but her son said to her one day, said, Mama, I wish you'd stop. Ada was the colored woman that helped them. And she said, I wish you'd tell Ada to stop coming around and asking people if they want their coffee here. And so Miss Lucy told her, said, now her, said, Ada's old and she doesn't know any better. And besides, I do want my coffee here. But you really would have to know Miss Lucy to appreciate that. But she was cute as she could be. She kind of reminded me of Barbara Bush.
Barbara Bush.
Yes, she did. Miss Lucy kind of reminded me of Barbara Bush and her look and the way she talked and all.
Oh.
But is that still? I have to ask that again. I don't know when to shut up and then talk.
Well, go ahead with your talking. The thing I've laughed about, she scratches folks' name off as we go into the dining room.
Well, I just scratch them when they don't even have to itch. You just scratch them whether they itch or not. I think that's what I said one time, and I
laughed.
Yeah, you laughed at that. I hadn't even thought about that being funny. And then, these things I say that I don't think about being funny that you think's funny, and a lot of people don't think that funny. But yeah. I think my grandchildren, Linda, and some of them will enjoy it, because she probably wants me to tell her some things that I did when I was little and things that I said. I really think Linda and Jim will enjoy this tape, because it's just silly stuff. But
I think we'll all enjoy it.
It's things that her granny said and did. Mm. Because I can't afford to put on tape all that her granny said and did.
No, I guess not. Well, some of the things are not permissible, but some of them are, and maybe we shouldn't say smart remarks, but just say incidents in Lucille's life.
Yeah, she said some, like being married 3 times. That's a good incident in itself, isn't it?
Yeah, I always tease her and try to embarrass her by saying, well, she's been married 3 times, and then she tells, and not a one of them died. Wait a minute. Not a divorce in the family.
No.
Go ahead and tell
it. I killed all 3 of them.
You tell it all. You tell it your way.
Well, I don't mind. Don't tell it.
Well, tell it. Hurry up and tell it. Well, number one was Luther.
Yeah. And he's the daddy of my 2 girls. And he died. I lived with him 13 and a half years. And he died on Friday of leukemia.
And you lived where?
In West Palm Beach, Florida. And then I came back to Georgia and lived with my mother about 4 years. And I married again. I married Mr. Walton from Vienna. And we lived together exactly 13 and a half years, and he died on Friday with leukemia. So I thought, well, I'll never get another husband, because they'll think they shall die in 13 and a half years with leukemia. But they didn't. I married Ben Wilson, and we lived together 25 years. And he died, I guess, with old age. And that's time to cut that
thing
off. Is it on?
Yeah, it's on. Well?
Well, that's a deep subject for such a shallow mind.
Uh-huh, you're not talking about me.
No.
What's the rest of your tale?
Oh, well, I was...
You told so many about wells and...
Well, I was talking about a book. Going down cotton patches.
No, I'm talking about the well.
Oh.
You used to have to draw water.
Well, I could have a shallow mind too, you know. But anyway, they had told me that the well had old rawhide and bloody bones in it. To keep us from playing around the well, they had scared us about the old rawhide and bloody bones.
Rawhide and bloody bones.
Yeah, and so I believe that there's one in the well. And so Mom told me one afternoon late that dark to go throw a bucket of water up. We had a water shed and a bucket out there, you know, to put the fresh water in. She told me to draw it up a bucket of water. And I didn't want to do it because I was afraid of rawhide and bloody bones. And of course, she thought I was just using that for an excuse not to draw the water. But she made me go on and do it. And so I took the thing and got way out on the porch because our well was on the back porch. And I would get way back and pull and try to draw the water. When the bucket got up to the top, instead of me being able to reach over and get it, I was going to jerk it out on the porch so I could get the bucket without reaching in the well, because I didn't want old blood bones to get me. So I just had the whole porch wet, and just I spilled all the water. Mama comes out there and has me to get it out like I should. But I was afraid of rawhide and blood bones. You never heard of rawhide and blood bones?
No, I never have.
All you gals that wasn't living in the country have not lived.
Well,
I just meant so much. Just like when Margie went down in a buck, I think it was, went down in the cotton patching, picked off enough of those old caterpillars to put all over her front of her dress, and then she comes back and tells me, she said, "Look, I'm going to hug you." Well, I ran and screaming, "Mama, Mama," and Mama sat down on the porch leg and wouldn't make a stop until I fell, and then she didn't bother me, she didn't hug me, she didn't want to hug me, but she just scared me to death. But one day somebody there on the farm killed a little black snake, and they hung him up on the fence because if you hang up a snake when you kill him, you know it'll rain.
Oh?
You didn't know that?
No.
Lord, yes. But anyway, they hung him up because we needed rain. And so I went out and got him. My oldest sister, Margie, was sitting on the porch crocheting, and she was just working at it. And I went out and got the snake. I didn't actually get the snake. Mama had a little black leather strap that she carried around most of the time in her apron to whip us with, but she had hung it up in the kitchen, and I got it and put it on a stick and brought it around the house, and I just pitched it over in Marge's lap, and I said, "Margie, here's that snake," and it just crawled up in her lap like a snake, and she fainted.
Fainted,
it scared her to death. She thought it was that snake or somebody had killed. And when Mama got through with me, I wish I had fainted.
But she used the strap. You used to tell a tale about your mother and the strap, and you'd sit down and she couldn't whip you?
Well, when she'd got whipped, I used to think she got up every morning and whipped us all five just to get it over with, because she knew we were going to have tattle on that day. But anyway, when she whipped me, she couldn't whip me. I would just run up to her and grab her around the legs and squat down. And just hold her so tight. She couldn't stand up hardly. She couldn't whip me. She finally gets the tickle. She just get loose and walk off and leave me, so I never did really get a good whipping. That's enough of that stuff.
This thing's on.
Oh, it is. That's using my tail.
Yeah, you should have said that. That was your line.
Yeah.
But Barbara and her friend enjoyed hearing your tape so far. You ready to talk some more?
Oh, yeah, I'm always ready to talk.
Well, before we start that, what about that fern there? It's a pretty thing.
Well, it's one I've had for years. I had it when I lived in Viana, and I don't remember exactly where I got it, but I carried it to Rochelle when I married Ben, and I've given away dozens and dozens of cuttings of it, but I've just had it a long time, and I still keep it.
You said about 45 years?
Yeah, at least that long, yeah.
Well, that's an antique.
It's getting to be an antique.
Another funny thing I want you to do, you said you were brought up in the country and could call hogs.
Oh, Lord. I'm not sure I can call them now because my voice has changed. I used to sing, too, but I can't sing anymore. But I don't know if I can even call hogs now. But I used to have to help feed the hogs, and we'd say, "Whoa! That was part of the call," and you said, "You're getting them to come and get the slop, you know." Just fixing to ask that question again, but I'm not laughing. But I guess it is on, isn't it?
Well, I hope.
Well, anyway. But there's a, you say, I said, "I've forgotten how to call hog." Whoop, whoop.
You make a lot of noise.
Yeah, you just keep hogging. But they'll come when you start calling that. Just saying, "Whoop, whoop," and they'll come running if they're used to being called.
Then you won a prize one time.
But this was at school. We were having a little contest, a little country school. And back then, I had a hog calling boys because I lived in the country. And I was calling, and some of the boys didn't like it because I won it instead of them. But I could have been a call hogs then, but I've about forgotten what to say and how to do it.
Well, you nearly broke up the party going to the Valentine party by trying to call hogs out in line.
One woman.
Do that again.
One woman fainted and passed out. Now, this is all being recorded, isn't it? Well, I won't call the name of the one that did faint, but that wasn't the reason she fainted. She didn't faint. She just had a spell. Oh, Lord.
Well, try it again.
Well, what did I do that afternoon? Which call did I do?
I don't know your call.
Well,
just call him to get the slop.
That's all. And you say, come on, baby, come on. That way they just come around and get the slop and the corn and whatever you're feeding them. We usually had slop buckets with all the dishwater and leftover food in it and tell them that, you know. But people that have never lived in the country and live like I have don't know what you're talking about when you talk about the slop bucket. You know.
While you're outside, tell about the cow that tried to get you.
Well, we had this big old mama hog that was bad to eat chickens. And so Papa put her down in the pasture in a pen, and some of us would have to go down there and feed her. So he gave me some corn one afternoon and said, Lucy, he'll take this corn down there and throw it over in that pen. So I did, and I was coming back just running along, just messing around, and all of a sudden I heard this noise behind. We had this old black cow, name was Molly. And she didn't like people, children especially, and she didn't like red. Well, she didn't like much of anything. And I looked around, and old Molly was coming after me, and she was close enough that her head was down, those horns sticking out, you know. And I'm telling you, she was right after me, and my daddy saw it, and he realized that cow was about to get me, but wasn't a thing he could do. And he said he thought, well, that cow's going to just gorge her to death. And he said we had this big fence around the lot where the mules stayed, and it was real tall fence, but it was a wooden fence, planks. And when I saw that cow and she was getting close to me, I just ran, and he said I just touched that plank, one of those planks, one time, and over that fence I went into the lot. With all the mules, but at least they weren't after me like the cow was. I got out of the way, but I just did. She just stood at that fence and paused like she thought, God, I missed her this time, but I'll get her next time. But I made it.
Well,
look for the loss it had been, she'd got me. Wouldn't this have been, though? Oh, Lordy.
And then, didn't you say something about slamming doors?
Oh, Lord, yes. When we were just children, we built what we call the big house, the new house. Well, it wasn't screened. In fact, nobody back then had screens on the house as much. But anyway, Papa had the house screened, and we were just running in and out and not thinking about closing the door or anything. So we were slamming doors, and the house had five outside doors to it. I think it was five. I know it was five. It might have been another one, too. But anyway, we would just run, five of us, in and out all the time, slamming doors. And Papa got tired of it, so he was sitting on the porch, and he called us all five there and said, I have something I want you to do. He said, I want y'all to get out in the yard and get far enough apart, and I want Edna to start it all. She was the youngest one. She comes in and slams the back door, come in the back door and come on through and come out the side door, go around the porch, go back in the front door, go back out the back door and back in. It was five doors anyway, that outside doors that we had to go in at. And every one of us had to do that, but we had to let it slam before the second one would come in, you know. And we did it, I don't know how many times, until I thought I'd never want to hear another door slam. He made us do that, sat down on that porch and listen to us slam doors, one right after the other, until we were all tired of it. And he finally asked us if we thought we could go in and out the doors without slamming them. And we told him we could, and we did. We never slammed another door, as long as I still don't slam doors.
And you don't even like to hear them slam.
I don't even like for somebody to come in my house and slam one, because I know Papa never did whip us as far as with a switch, but he whipped us a lot of times like that. About making us do things. Then one Christmas he gave us all a harp in our stocking, and Mama said she told him when he bought them, she said, Dan, what in the world? You buy five harps. And you know what a harp is, a harmonica.
Harmonica, yeah.
Yeah, harmonica. Well, he gave us all one in our stocking, you know. We sized our Santa Claus stuff, and the stocking was a harp and fruit and stuff. And we were so proud of it, and we all five, none of us could blow a tune, of course, but we were all blowing. And we, of course, we got up for a day to see what Santa Claus brought us. And we blew those harps, not a tune anywhere, but until about 9 o'clock that morning, and then Papa said, "Now, wait a minute, I'll let you come in. I have something to tell you." And that was the way he whipped us about everything. You know, he just put up with it until he got enough of it, and then he told us what to do. He said, "Now, I've heard all the harp I want to hear." He said, "You either put them up or go out down the yard somewhere and blow them." He said, "I don't want to hear them anymore in the house." Well, that took care of it. We didn't blow it in the house anymore, because he meant what he said. We didn't pay attention to Mama. If she told us not to do something, we went right ahead and did it. But we mind Papa, and he never whipped us.
Well, here we go again, but I'm looking at this grandparent book. Where did you get it?
Well, Linda Cohen from California, my granddaughter, sent it to me several years ago and said, "Granny, I want you to fill this out now and tell me all about you when you, from the time you was born, all your life." And of course, I still have it, and I've never filled out anything because I don't know how to word it to put it down on paper.
Well, how about the cassette now? That's a good idea. You just talk into this thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but it doesn't always sound like I meant for it to sound. But,
but it's on now.
Yeah, okay. Well, what do you want to know?
Well, the first question is about your family, your mother and your father.
Well, when
how did they meet?
Well, I don't know exactly how they met, but I know how when they was going together and they decided to get married. My mother was living with my Uncle John and Aunt Edna Adkins. Her mother was dead, and daddy was not very stable, I don't think, and she wasn't staying with him. And so she and Papa was going to get married, and they were going to marry. People used to run away, they called it, and get married, you know. And so she was going to slip out, and he was going to pick her up one night. And so he was going to whistle, and she was going out and meet him in the buggy and horse.
How old was she?
Well, she was between 13 and 14. She wasn't quite 14. And that's awful, but they had a happy marriage, so it didn't matter about that. But anyway, she so happened Uncle Johnny Ed had to go to a school meeting that night, and it just left her there with old Uncle Dan Adkins, old nigger man that lived there and looked after everything. He went back in the old shed room, went to bed, and so just left Mama there in the house. And when Papa come, and he was going to whistle one time, and Mama was supposed to slip out. And so when he whistled, and he heard this somebody walking down the hallway, and he thought it was Uncle John, and he thought he'd had it. But it was Mama, because she didn't have to slip out. She just was walking out. So she got in the buggy with him, and they went to Viana and got married. But when Grandpa and Uncle John and got home and found out what had happened, they had it annulled. And so then they took it to court, and they decided to let them get married again. So Papa had to buy some more license, and he had bought. That was the third set. The first set he bought, his brother, Uncle Willis, found out that he had bought them to get married. And so he thought he was too young. They were too young to get married. So he just took Papa down and gave him good whipping and took the items away and tore them up. So Papa went and bought these others, and they got married with them. Then when they had the note, he had to buy the third pair, the first set of license. So he told them later, he said, you ought to know I wanted you because I bought three sets of license to get you. But, I don't know what else I was going to tell.
Where'd they live?
Oh, well, Mama had a little piece of dirt farm, and had a little, well, we'd call it a nigger shack now, but just a little house on it. And they lived there, and then finally, after several years, well, the house was not all that little. It was just a little country house, though, but they built what we call the big house, because we moved into it when I was 4 years old. And it was on the same farm, of course, and that's where we lived till we were all married, and we all died. Mama died, and my dad and all died, and the house is still there. So, that's my tale.
Well, that's so far. Now, what about your sisters?
Well, I had five of them. That's our house. I think Mama told us that she was about a dozen, so I had six girls.
Well, start with the first one.
Well, the first one was named Bessie. Yes, Idora. Don't ask me why she's named that, because I don't know myself. But
and then, what was your brother's name?
My name.
We've turned the tape. Now for some more tales.
Well, I think I can start with Bessie. Bessie Idora.
Yeah, your older sister.
And she died before any of us was born. She swallowed a nickel and it killed her. But the reason it did, Mama thought that the best thing to do was to give her a dose of castor oil to get it out of her quicker, and it caused it to canker. The doctor said that she had given her some cornbread or baked potato or something to coat it around, it wouldn't hurt her. But
how did she get the nickel?
Well, my daddy was paying off cotton pickers that had been picking cotton, and so she wanted a nickel or some money, and he had given her money before. She was about 2.5 years old, and he gave her a nickel, and in a little bit she came back and wanted some more money, and he said, I gave you a nickel, what'd you do with it? And she said, I bought it. And he called my mama then and told her that Bessie had swallowed a nickel. So, of course, Mama went right straight and gave her the castor oil, and that's what the doctor said, what caused it. It cankered. It was just as green. She passed it. It was just as green as it could be, but it caused her to go into convulsions with a high fever, and she died before the doctor got there. And then after that, of course, Mama was pregnant with Margie at the time, my older sister that was living. So then after Margie, the oldest of the five that lived. And then there was Mineola. And then there was me, Mary Lucille. And then there was my next sister that we called Buck. Her name was Sally Bertha, but she's known to everybody as Buck. And then my baby sister, Edna Lee. And they all had families, all except Buck. She adopted a child, but Margie had three girls, and I had two girls. And we all, we wouldn't know what to do with a boy if we'd had one. But Mineola, when she married, she had a boy. Well, we thought it broke the record. And then in 16 months, she had twins, and one of them was a boy, so she really broke the record. But then my baby sister had three boys, and one girl.
But what about your name? How did the Margie get her name?
Well, she was named for both the grandmamas, Margie Elizabeth, and that's how she got her name. I don't know how Bessie got hers, except Mama just named her Bessie Idora. Well, I reckon for her, for many of Bessie. And because I think I've already said on that tape, though, that Mama said one time, well, none of you named your children for me. And I said, Mama, do you really expect us to name our children many of Bessie? She didn't really mean for us to name them that. But then when Myrtle, my oldest daughter, had her little girl, she named her for me and for Mama. Mama was Elaine before she married, and my name's Mary Lucille. So Myrtle named her Mary Elaine, and Mama was thrilled to death that she had a grandchild that was named for her. And I thought Mary Elaine made a pretty name, but I didn't think Bessie Idora was pretty.
What about Lucille? Mary Lucille?
Well, what do you mean, what about her?
How did you get your name?
Oh, well, really, I was the first one that Mama had had a doctor with, and that's because we were visiting my grandparents, and no granny woman wasn't up there, and so they had to have a doctor with me, and he asked Mama if he could name me, and he named me Mary, and Mama named me Lucille. So I got my name, Mary Lucille.
And from the first doctor?
From the first doctor that she had had, was having a baby, or Aunt Easter. I found others in the cabbage patch, and so I was told when I was growing up.
Well, all those quilt scraps.
I was a quilt scrap for a while. Scrap. I don't remember whether it was quilt scrap or just scrap, but that's anyway, I was nicknamed for my quilt scraps.
Then who was younger than you?
Buck,
that was her nickname.
Yeah, it was her nickname. Sally Bertha was her name, and then Edna Lee. Edna was the baby one.
Well, now, Buck
had the ability to recite.
Oh,
make recitations.
She took elocution when she was, well, I took a little myself, but you never know it. But she took it and was real good at giving readings or speeches or something. And she won a medal with her name on it, the year and everything that she won it. And she was, of course, real proud of that. But she was good at that right on until she died, about giving readings and things.
At different assemblies.
She at club meetings.
Club meetings.
She didn't do it professionally at all, but she did. It was very entertaining.
Well, you were telling another tale about Edna one time, having things, snakes on the back porch.
Oh, Lord, yes. Well, she had boys, you know, and one girl. And I went to see her. Well, I knew she did whatever the children loved to do, whatever they wanted to do, but I didn't know she'd got to the point she'd let them bring in live snakes and lizards and things. I went down there one time to see her, and I went around the back, go around the back, went in the back door, and down on the porch was this big box thing with a glass top on it, and there was two snakes in there. They were not great big ones, but they were snakes. And I said, Edna, what in the world are you doing with these snakes? She said, well, they belong to the boys, Charles and Billy, or some of them. And I said, somebody's going to be getting out. She said, no, they can't get out. She said, the boys take them out when they get home from school and play with them. I said, you mean out in the house? And she said, yeah. She said, sometimes they get behind something. We can't find them, and we just leave them out all night. I said, but I'll tell you now, I'm not spending the night with you anymore, because I said, I'm not going to wake up tonight with a snake in the bed with me. She said, well, they'll bite you. I said, no, they're not going to bite me, because they're not going to get the chance. I wouldn't. Well, I'd died if one of those things had been in bed with me. But she didn't seem to be afraid of them.
Didn't she? Got you told.
Yeah, she told me. She said, that's why the Lord didn't let you have any boys, because you're so afraid of all that kind of stuff. She said that she never washed. Every week before she washed clothes, that she turned the pockets of all the blue jeans and emptied out dead toad frogs and things like that. Well, that wasn't my piece of cake, I can tell you.
It's on there.
Oh, it is.
Tell more about your family. You told about your sisters. Now tell about your family life and your father. And
well, my father died quite young, but before he did, he was a real good, fun-loving father. He never whipped us with a switch or anything, but he whipped us with things he had us to do. But I've already told about the screen doors and the hearth and all that stuff.
Tell about the Easter clothes.
Well, he just always, twice a year, about as often as we have gotten any new shoes and new clothes, and we all go to town, and we went in the buggy, of course, and he'd go with us in the store, and there's a Churchill department store on 7th Street in Cordell, and we'd all go in there. And he would tell the clerk, I want, if he was buying coats. Well, we didn't buy ready-made dresses. Mama made our clothes. But he, one time, I remember, he went in and he told the clerk he wanted coats for all six of his girls. Well, that meant Mama, too. And of course, Mama said, no, she didn't need a coat. Because she was very conservative. She didn't believe in spending money. She didn't have to. So the clerk got out all his coats and fitted all five of us. And so when he got through, he said, now I want one for my big girl. That was Mama. Mama didn't want him to do it, but he had her try on a coat, and he bought her coat, too. And I can't remember now what I was going to say.
Well, tell about the Easter dresses.
What did I say about the Easter dresses?
Embroidered.
Oh, well, back then, everybody was wearing, you bought this eyelid embroidery. And it was real pretty material, and of course it had to be starched and ironed. But Mom made, she made all five of us a dress, and would run ribbon through the, it was out and had places to run the ribbon all around the bottom and all around the sleeves and all around the top. And all, and she had a little bow at the sleeves and the neck and all.
And we all had one of different colors. Mine was always blue. It was white. It was all white embroidery. I was embroidered, but mine had the blue in it. And I've forgotten all the colors, different ones of colors. But she'd make all those dresses, and we'd go to Sunday school and church dressed up. But as soon as we'd get home, we'd have to pull them off because we didn't play in them. And all had little black patent leather slippers. I don't know how in the world they ever could afford all of it. But one fall, we always got new clothes in the fall, too, and we all got new shoes. And I never will forget the pair that Buck got. She got some little high-top shoes, and they were black patent leather with a red top and had a little tassel on them. And I was so mad and so jealous because Buck's was prettier than in the rest of them, I thought. And she was so proud of them, and she didn't fail to let us know that she had the prettiest pair of shoes in the bunch. But I don't remember why she got, I guess it was the only one they could fit her in, but anyway, she got the prettiest shoes, and she was real proud of them.
Yeah. You said something about your mother owned Little Dirt.
Well, when they married, she owned this little plot of, well, I think it was a couple hundred acres of land, but none of it was cleared up. And there might have been a few acres of it cleared, but not much. And every year, my daddy would have to clear up. He would clear up some more land. And what I mean by clearing up, they cut trees down and would pile them up, roll them up into big piles and burn them in big bonfires and all. And all the people in the neighborhood would come and help him one day. Mom would cook dinner for all these men. And they'd eat dinner there, but they wouldn't charge each other. And then in a day or two, they'd all go over to another one's house and clear up some land, cut those trees down. That's the way they did it, instead of hiring somebody to do it. And we usually had a new man working there then. Of course, later he had several, but at that time he just had the one. And they would actually cut the trees down and burn them, get them out of the way. Then they'd have to get up the stumps. And they would dig around the stumps and put a chain around the stumps, and had what they called a stump puller, and they'd hitch the mules up to it. They'd put the chain around it, and sometimes those mules, they'd have to whip them and make them pull and haul out them, and those mules would be pulling just like they're trying to pull up the whole earth, and they were, really. Binding those roots, you could hear them breaking loose, and they'd pull that stump up, and they'd throw it on the fire and burn up all that stuff. And that's where they cleared land. They clear a few acres each year, so he finally got it all cleared up.
And then those stumps were called lighter.
Fat lighter. Yeah, well, of course, he'd save a lot of them to cut up the splinters, you know. But when he's clearing land, you'd burn a lot of them. Of course, they wouldn't dare do that now because you could sell them for plenty of money. But back then, you couldn't sell stuff like that. They just burn up those big, nice pine trees and things, trying to get them out of the way so they could farm. Because all the land back 75, 80 years ago, most of it was in some kind of growth. And ours happened to be a lot of trees, pine trees and oak trees.
What else did you grow?
Oh, we grew peanuts and cotton and corn. Well,
sugar cane.
We had sugar cane ourselves. And my papa made a lot of syrup. But he made syrup for the neighbors, too. They didn't have the machinery that he had, and they'd bring it over there, and he'd grind that syrup and that cane, and then make that syrup, and he'd get a certain amount of it for making theirs. And we had the best times. That's the way I met my first husband. He came one night. He was going with Mineola, and he came one night. I beat a time. But anyway, I wasn't old enough. I really wasn't old enough when I married him, for that matter. But anyway, he kept picking at me, and he was peeling cane, and he threw a knot at me, or peeling off, and he threw one and hit me up on the forehead kind of, and I cried, and he came over and petted me and thought, sorry, he hit me. And I said, no, he and I were sweethearts. And then he didn't pay more attention to Mineola, and which was real ugly, I guess, but it worked out all right.
Well, it worked out real good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So now it's going, and I'm not putting my talking in it.
Tell about making syrup.
Did you boil it in a...
Well, a kettle. We had first a big round iron kettle under the furnace built up. Under it, around it, and under it, you put wood in it and cooked your syrup. But after the new woman fell in the pot, kettle of hot syrup and got burned to death, we got rid of that and got an evaporator.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, we had, at night, we'd make syrup till 11 o'clock at night, and all the people in the community would come and gather around just visit and life and talk with these niggers that was the old Beulah and John Anderson. His name was John Anderson. I don't know what Beulah's last name was. But they've been drinking cane skinnings, and, you know, they'll make you drunk.
Cane skinnings?
Yeah, cane skinnings.
Yeah, even the hogs.
Oh, yeah, we had hogs and cows to get drunk drinking it. But anyway, Beulah had been drinking. She had too much, and Papa already told John Anderson, so you take Beulah on home, so she's got no business around here. But he kept messing around and hadn't carried her home, and she was running around and staggering and laughing and talking, and she staggered up against that kettle thing that the boiling syrup was in, and she stumbled and fell over in it. And if you know, Papa made us go to the house. I wanted to stay there and see the finish, but he made us go to the house. And they couldn't get her out because she was bouncing, so just hot syrup was just coming out everywhere. They began to pull out the fire from underneath and try to stop it from boiling. But anyway, she died. I mean, they couldn't get her out. But they finally, when they did, they said the flesh was just ready to fall off of her bones. She just that hot boiling syrup had just cooked her. So then we didn't use that kettle anymore. He bought an evaporator. You know what an evaporator is?
Well, I know it.
Juice goes in one end and it goes up and down little trough things. And by the time it gets down to the other end, it's syrup. But if it's not good thick syrup like my daddy liked to have it, he would dip it back and let it come back again part of the way. He put it back up in the halfway the evaporator and it would come back through again and be syrup. And then, of course, they'd draw it out in a tub or something. And if he's putting it up in bottles and all, then he'd pour it up in bottles. But a lot of it they put in barrels, you know, and they just let it put it up in barrels. But he made a lot of syrup for himself. We always had a big cane patch, but he made a lot for the community, too. So we first had an old mule that pulled the cane mill, you know, and he fed the cane mill. And the old man that did the feeding the cane mill wore one pair of overalls all the time because the juice would just squirt out all over and it was sweet, you know. And his overalls, he said that when he pulled them out, now he just stood them up. Next morning, got up and put them on. They were so stiff, was cane juice, he could stand them up. But then later, when they started making gasoline engines, Papa bought a gasoline engine to do it. And that was much, you could grind a lot more syrup, I mean cane like that, than you could with a mule. But it was fun to have that old mule go around and around that thing all the time.
You wonder if the mule didn't get dizzy.
Well, he didn't get dizzy, but he'd give out, and they'd have to change mules, because we had more than one mule, so they changed mules. It was a great, was a great life. It really was. We thoroughly enjoyed it. I did. Well, we all did. Manil never did participate in a lot of it as we did. She was always Miss Daisy or Miss somebody. I think Miss Daisy would have felt right good. She'd like to have a chauffeur, somebody drove around. But she sat on the porch and crochet and tat.
Well, watch that. She may listen to this.
Yeah, she probably will. Well, I say it to her, too.
Okay.
I don't care.
Well, tell, you had a lot of cane punish.
Oh, yeah. That's the way my daddy got killed, really. It was just a big pile of the cane pumpkins or whatever you call them. Anyway, it was where the juice had been taken out of the tulips and all. And it was just a big pile. I'm talking about it looks like a mountain out there. It had so much cane grinding, and Papa would have to haul it into the lot and all where the mules were, and they would walk over it, and it would finally get to be good fertilizer. So this was in the spring after they'd quit grinding. They'd grind the cane in the fall of the year. But this in the spring, he had the niggers filling up the wagon with cane pumpkins, and then they'd go put it in the barn and other places that where it would be trampled on and all, in the cow barns and things. And so this was on Monday morning, they were doing that, and he was driving the wagon. The niggers would fill it up, and then Papa would get up on the wagon and drive it to the back to the lot, and then they would unload it for him. And so there was a well out there that was called the well where we watered all the stock and all. And they had cleaned it out, and there was a little hill there, a place where they cleaned out the well, and he was on up on his knees on the cane pumpkins on the wagon, and the mules were kind of jigging along, and the nigger's name was Walter, and he hadn't gotten to the barn to open the lock, to open the gate. And so Papa just said, whoa, to the mules, and when he said that, they just stopped, and they was up on that little hill, and it kicked him off on his head, and his shoulder hit the wagon wheel, and he was stooped a little with rheumatism, and it just popped his neck.
Broke his neck and
killed him. He lived the rest of the day, but he never did speak, never did know anything. But, yeah, that's the way he died, real young. I guess he was about, I don't know how far, he was in his 40s.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, sure was, because he was. He had just been in the house at Martin Luther, and I had gone and spent the day with his sister, the one that raised him. And we got back, and in May of the year, and back then you raised the chickens, and you usually had your first fries early in the spring, you know, because you didn't have fried chicken during the winter, because you didn't have any chickens, little chickens like that. So Papa came in, they was out there working, and he came in the house, and he walked up to me and said, I used to love the chicken feet. Mom would fry the chicken feet, and I loved to gnaw them. And for years, I'd stand behind the door and eat them, because everybody told me they'd make you pretty if you eat chicken feet behind the door. And I did it for how long, and Papa Fine said, he called me Seal. He said, Seal, I'm going to tell you something. He said, why are you standing behind the door eating chicken feet? He said, your sister's eating up the chicken. So I finally got smart. But he walked up to me and put his arm around me and said, I saved you chicken feet. We had chicken yesterday for dinner. He said, I saved you chicken feet. And I said, oh, good. So just to carry the joke on, I went and I got the chicken feet. He walked out of the house and got up on the wagon and got killed right, you know, right soon after. I didn't even finish eating the chicken feet.
Oh,
so, but he was always in a good humor and always pleasant to be with.
Well, he made a good family life.
Yeah, he did. He really did. I never saw him, Mama, just really have a fuss or anything. I know Lena Grace Adkins, a cousin of mine, was over there one time. She spent the night with us, and Mom and Papa started out towards the barn. I don't know where they were going to look at some little new pigs or something. And they were walking out there with their arm around each other. And Lena Grace said, well, you know, I know my mother and daddy love each other, but I have never seen them do that. With the arms around each other and all. And of course, I don't think Uncle John, I never knew of Uncle John and Edna fussing anything, and she didn't. She just said that she'd never seen them show any affection like that toward each other. But he was, law at night, when Mom would come out of the kitchen and we'd get through the dishes, a lot of times he'd reach up and pull Mama down in his lap. We just thought it was a natural thing to do, you know. We'd all be sitting there in front of the fire. He'd pull her down in his lap, and she'd sit down in his lap like they was courting. You know, they done had five young or six.
You had a happy family life.
Yeah, we did have. We sure did.
I've got down here to ask you about pies at school closing.
Oh, that was, well, back then, you always had a what they call a community picnic when school closed, you know. This was a little country school. I called it Adkins School. And we had the Adkins Picnic and had it at the old, what they called it now, but anyway, all the people would cook, you know, food to take to the picnic. And Mom had this great big old trumpet she took the tray out of, and she would put our food in that, and she'd make six or eight pies.
In the trunk and the tray?
In the trunk. She would put those pies, put one down, and then she'd put, we had old brooms that we used to make. We used to go down in the woods and get the broom straw. Well, she'd take these straws, and that was as long as the pie, and she'd break one, put it across there, and put another one across the other way, and stack those piles up on each other like that and have 6 or 8 stacked up that way.
Oh.
And make cakes and fried chicken and all this good stuff you take to. And one of the things she used to always do was make salmon croquettes, and they were so good. I don't particularly like these they have here, but Mama did make good salmon croquettes. She always made a big pile of them to take to the picnic.
Okay, it's on again.
Oh, it is. Well, I guess what I was going to say was when Luther died, well, he was 31, I was 28, and Ed and Claire Myrtle was 11, but Ed and Claire was about 2 and a half. I came back to live with my mother and my stepfather, Norris. And then my brother-in-law wanted to go in business, and he didn't have the money, so I had a little bit of insurance money, so I put up the money, and we opened up a business, an electrical business, and radio, because it wasn't in TVs then. We sold radios and electric, they began to have electric refrigerators and all kinds of electric things we sold, and I didn't know anything about making a contract or anything, so I went to a little business school. They had a business school up over the building there. And every morning I'd come into work. I was living out at my mother's. I'd come in and I'd go upstairs and take a little business course about an hour. Just learn. I didn't take a regular course. I took learn how to write a business letter and learn. And then
keep books.
She showed me how to keep books. And then a good friend of mine, friend of my brother-in-law's, she came over and set my books up for me and showed me how to get started. And I didn't know one thing about it. All I knew how to do was to cook and tend to babies. And but I learned to do it, and we had a real good business after about 3 years, and by that time I was getting ready to marry again, so I sold my business out to my brother-in-law. But I still remember to this day the first contract I made and who it was made to. It was I sold a radio, and he was going to pay for it by the week or by the month. So it was Otto Ligon, and I made out my first contract.
Well, good. And you made enough to make a living.
Yeah, I made a living.
You could have made a living the rest of your life.
Well, I guess working with my brother-in-law and all made it easier for me, because he knew he was a mail carrier. And so I kept the business until he got through in the afternoon, and then he would come in and help out.
What about this next marriage, this Mr. Walton?
Well, I met him. He had a business right next door. And I never was really introduced to him, but just met him, and I used to go in there and buy a piece of material and all, and I didn't know he was even looking at me. And he had a girl working in there, Janie Fohan, and he had told Janie, he said, I'd ask that woman for a date, but I'm afraid she turned me down, because he was a lot older than I was. But I didn't know all this at the time was going on. So one day, the drugstore was right up from our place of business, and so I was going to run up there and get me a Coca-Cola, and of course then you could get one for a nickel, and so I got me a nickel and started out the front door, and here come this Walton, and he said, where are you going? I said, I'm fishing around the drugstore and getting me a Coca-Cola. He said, that's where I'm going. He said, how about going with me? So I walked on up there with him. We went in the back door, and of course everybody was snickering and laughing because that's Willow and Willow were together. So we sat down there and drank cocoa a few minutes, and because I had known him, I had met the shop there and the store and all, but I really didn't know him that well. And when we came back, I told him, I said, I had to go back to the store. I left it open. There was nobody in there. So when we got back to the door, he said, if I was to drive my buggy out to your place, would you let me hitch my horse? I said, you can try it and see. And I went on in the store. And he tried it the next Sunday. I said, it wasn't a horse and buggy, it was a car, but that was the way he asked me for a date.
So that was funny.
Yeah. Is that all of it now?
No. Tell about your marriage, Ed and Claire.
Ed and Claire?
Wanting.
Oh, Well, when Mary, she was crazy about Miss Baldwin. She and Myrtle both were, and he was real good to them. He couldn't, their own daddy couldn't have been any better to them. And she was just thrilled to death when I married him, and everybody's been kidding him, saying, "You're going to get a new daddy, aren't you?" And so every time he'd come out there, he'd bring her something, and was always real sweet to him. So she was thrilled to death that I was getting married. And so we hadn't been married too long, and she didn't feel good that night. She wanted me to sleep with her, and she was whining, crying, and wanted me to sleep with her. And I said, I'm sleeping with Daddy. I said, you can go, you sleep in there with Myrtle. That was her sister, of course. And she said, she was crying. I said, well, you told me you was glad you wanted me to marry. She said, well, I did, but I didn't know you was going to sleep with him. Oh, dear. What am I supposed to talk about now?
Mr. Walton's bonus, the granddaughter.
Oh, yeah, when we married, because I had my two, and then he had his granddaughter, which was like his own child. Her mother died when she was born, and he had had her there ever since she was born. And, of course, the other Miss Walton was an invalid. She was not able to take care of Bobby. So my mama's name was Minnie.